Hi everyone, welcome to the week ahead. As you can tell, I'm not Andrew Simon. I'm sitting in for him this week. He's luckily on holiday, escaping all the glum UK weather. But don't worry, we still have Dominique and we have plenty to talk about. Dominique, how are you?
Very well, Ben. I see that you don't have the swaying palm trees backdrop.
No, I'm letting Andrew live his reality and live life in the much warmer climates. I'm far more UK oriented, and I'll be happy with the dark backdrop. Should we kick off with some of the data from the past week?
Yeah, I mean, the most interesting data in a way was the polling and betting data. We had this big move in betting markets that was in favor of Trump. There was this discussion on is the market manipulated? And it turns out the betting market was just ahead of the polling data. Nationwide, Harris was ahead by about 2%, and now she's lost it all. It's back to 0%. So we are, and if you look at the swing states, it's the same. I mean, still within the margin of error, but it's really moved in favor of Trump over
And
the past.
what do you make of the difference between the polls? If you look at the swing states, the polls are in some states even the biggest sort of advantage to say the Republicans or Democrats in either state is quite it's still quite narrow there. Whereas if you look at say Poly Market or some other version of a better market, they're far more convinced that either Trump or Harris will win a certain state. Well, I mean, what's your take on the swing states and sort of the betting odds at the moment?
So in terms of change, it's definitely moved in favor of Trump. I mean, we can talk about why, hamburger flipping, maybe, who knows. In terms of polling data, the problem with the state's polling data is that it's not as reliable as nationwide data. So what I suspect is going on is that the people who are actually putting their money on the line have access to other data. For instance, there is this consultant data showing that if you break down voters by characteristics nationwide and then try to apply those characteristics to states, you come up with something which is much more favorable than to Trump than just looking at the plain polling data. So
So
we
is your take then that markets are probably right in the sort of assumption we should make at the moment is probably Trump could be in office by the end of the year, or are you a bit skeptical that this is all going too easily for Trump at the moment?
so I'm with the betting markets, and I'll tell you why. If, as you know, I spend a lot of time reading the news, listening to the news. I joke that my job is reading the news, which is only half a joke. And you sense a sense of, I wouldn't say desperation, but urgency on the part of the Democrats. You've had Harris coming out with a new plan targeting African American men, Obama trying to speak in a woke language. So you get a sense that, and even the ads, the campaign ads of the Harris campaign have changed. I get inundated with ads from both sides, and her latest one was about money. I mean, the Democrats were being outspent by the Republicans, and she needed more money. Actually, her fundraising has been amazing. I think it's been the highest ever. She's outraised Trump by a factor or two or three. So money is not the issue. The issue is, I think, the message is not getting across.
And I think if we're going to talk on politics, we should probably talk about how well you think they could do if either of them landed in office. And I think it would then be rude not to talk about the piece you put out over the past week, that incredible piece, if I may say, where you play the role correct me if I'm wrong, of being the Treasury Secretary nominee to President-elect Donald Trump. I mean, what was your idea there?
So it's not a job application. I love Mac OHIVE. I love working with people like you, Ben. It's such a pleasure. No, it's just, there is this consensus that Trump is terrible. He's going to destroy the American political system, the American economy. And whenever there is, such a strong consensus somewhere, my sort of my nose is twitching. I'm wondering, what's going on there. And so it was just an exercise to figure out, is it possible to implement Trump's key
So,
ideas? And
for our listeners, I mean, what are sort of the key points that Trump has to do to make sure he is successful? Or what are the sort of the things he shouldn't do that would sort of ruin his second term in office?
so that's basically what I wanted to do, that you can implement the key parts of his program and have higher growth and contained inflation. And the most important thing that he can do is not have an explosion in inflation. So contain the budget deficit, continue with competition policies. This is super important. The US is falling behind in terms of being a competitive economy. I mean competition between businesses. The cost of living here is significantly higher than in Europe because of this lack of competition. So, and then the Fed. I don't think the Fed is Trump's enemy. Because the Fed has no appetite to crash the US economy. So they will talk tough. They'll stop cutting, maybe. They might even do one or two hike if inflation, say, goes back to 3%. But will they try to crash the US economy? Absolutely not. I'm actually quite confident of that. So instead, of making this big fuss about the Fed, which makes them scarier and more influential than they really are, I think it would be best to just let them do their thing. And also all the productivity enhancing things that Trump wants to do, like deregulation, I think they could be quite positive. I mean, if you think about it, the end of the pandemic was what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and we haven't seen much lightening of the regulatory burden. There are huge issues with regulatory inefficiencies in the US. For instance, that's why we have a housing shortage. And if a Trump administration could focus on that, I think it would be beneficial to everybody.
And I guess to round off on the talk of politics, obviously there's less than 2 weeks now until people have to go register their votes. Is there anything that clients need to be watching out for in between now and election day, or is it pretty much plain sailing from here until the date?
As you said, we are really within the margin of error. So, and this is such a strange election, many things could happen. No, I think clients need to think hard about, would a Trump economic team be so irrational that they would push inflation to new highs? I don't think so. Just keep an open mind. I don't think the policy making is going to be as catastrophic as I think, the media are demonizing and ridiculing Trump. And to be fair to them, he's certainly an easy target. But I think it's important for investors to look beyond the theatrics.
Okay. And perhaps before we go to some of the big data points next week, we should shift away from, I guess, Trump serving chips, or as you call it over there, fries. And look at some of the data that we've had. I mean, we've had PMIs, claims, durable goods today, and even a Fed speaker. So continuing that theme of pushing back some of the Fed dovishness that we had through September. I mean, what's your take on the data? Are you still calling for two more cuts into year end? I know the election may have some role into it, but what's the past week done to your call on the Fed? Are you still for two cuts, Dom?
Yeah, becoming having more and more doubts about December. So November, they have to do it. Otherwise, it would be an implicit admission that, you know, they were wrong in cutting 50 basis points. Also, there isn't that much deviation yet between the SEP macro forecast and the data. December, you know, it's more of an issue. I think the next shoe to drop is when people have a look on their Bloomberg terminal at core PCE year-on-year. I'm sorry to say, but you know, there was always this panic about the end of this inflation in the first quarter. But if you look at just the simple data and compare the first quarter with the past few months, you can see that we've been rebounding over the past few months. The September PCE is going to be a little better. We will see the year-on-year data dip a little bit. But the bottom line is, if I was the Fed and just looking at the data, which is what, you know, at the short-term data, which is what they are basically doing, I'd be a bit more panicked than in the first quarter. So we'll see. The data is volatile. I'm having growing doubts about December, especially if Trump wins, because, you know, Trump is going to really disrupt the US economy. Inflation was already sticky. It could move up a little bit. So that would be enough for the Fed to get cold feet about a December cut. But too early to make the call. Based on the data we've had, I stick to my two more cuts for this year.
Awesome. And so I guess that unsurprisingly, next week's going to be pretty big then for your Fed call. I mean, we could be sat here next week and God knows what happens in PC, NFP releases, GDP releases. It could end up it could change. And I know markets now are sort of leaning towards core PC coming in closer to 0.3% month on month than say 0.2% month on month. What's your expectations? I know we're looking for 0.24 month on month for the core release. But I mean, what's your expectation behind the numbers, sort of the intricacies that we're seeing there? Is there anything to watch out for?
So the number, the short-term number is very volatile. We have this, you know, we have this model. I prefer to think more medium-term in terms of trends. You look at the PCE forecast, and the actual is not going to be that different, 3%. Ben, in the US, our trend rate growth is 2%. 3% is huge. And again, I'm surprised that people are not making more of a fuss out of it, but it means the output gap is going to widen some more, which to me suggests that inflation isn't going to remain stuck around the 2.5 to 3 quarter, maybe 3%. Now, in terms of you know, the month-on-month data, it's very volatile, but I think the trend is there. So that's the GDP for next week. The PCE, so as you said, you know, the street already has its number. We have our own number, not much surprise there. NFP, because of the hurricanes, it's going to be very difficult to interpret.
Just quickly on the NFP, then. I mean, payrolls, I looked just before we started recording, markets are expecting only a 120K jump, which obviously versus last month is pretty mediocre. But at the same time, they're expecting unemployment to remain at 4.1%. It's miles off the SEP in reality when you consider this up at 4.4 for year end. What numbers should we be paying attention to? Is it the unemployment rate? Is it wages? Is it the payrolls? How are you thinking about the release, especially as you mentioned sort of the volatility in the number?
So there are really two things that I'm focusing on in this release. One is indicators of the balance between demand and supply, which is more unemployment and wages than the headline number. Because the headline number, as you know, I've been talking about this forever, I think has been influenced by this enormous surge in illegal immigration, which, by the way, is not priced in, but has been driving so much of what has happened over the past year. So the administration finally realized it wasn't a good idea to have this many people, low-skilled people coming in. In June, they closed the border, so the inflows have gone down a lot, which explains that NFPs have slowed, but the unemployment rate is actually falling. And the other thing that's happened, which I think is related to that, is a pickup in wage growth. So these are really the two things that we'll be looking at, because labor supply, with no one has a good estimate of it because of this unrecorded immigration flows.
I was just going to ask one other question is obviously going into to last month's NFP, there was a risk that you could argue unemployment could have moved towards, say, 4.3%, and then the Fed would have rightfully sat there and gone, okay, look, 4.3 is close to 4.4%, and okay, that's where we're justified. Obviously, that hasn't happened. We're 4.1%. Let's say we markets are right this time out, we get 4.1%. The unemployment rate, and let's say over the next month or two, inflation, core PCE comes in line with what's expected, as do wages. If unemployment sticks to, say, 4.2% in November, as in there's a tiny uptick, as probably some would expect when rates are somewhat restrictive, but it's still quite far below the 4.4%. What impact do you think that has on the Fed? Do you think that confirms that they wouldn't go in December? Or would they need to see further evidence, say in PCE, a bit stronger PCE or a bit stronger wages with that to get them stopping in December, i.e., only cut once more in November and then kind of pause for thought in December?
They think like economists, which means they are very holistic. They are not going to focus on just one piece of data. One thing they have told us very clearly, they don't see the labor market as a source of inflationary pressure. Now, if we continue to see wage increases in, 0.3, 0.4 a month, they are going to have to reconsider the view, and that could be one of the factors, but not the only one that would drive them to pause in December. So it's not mechanically, 110 basis point move one way or the other that's going to drive them. I think it's really their holistic assessment of is the market a source of inflationary pressure? They didn't think so, but let's see what happens to the wage data. Though again, I mean, this NFP is a bit wasted in a way because of the impact of the hurricanes.
Do you think then markets are going to pay? I guess when I look at the release, the one thing I'm concerned about is obviously we have the 120K and we had 250K last month. Do you think markets are going to get a bit too focused on this 120K and potentially any revisions to last month? As in if the 250K is revised to say, let's say 180K, 170K, something like that, and say payrolls comes in their expectations, so let's say 110. Do you think they go, oh my God, this is pretty awful? Or do you think they go, look, unemployment's remained at 4.1%, wages are showing some signs of strength there. Do you think they concentrate on the payrolls data, or do you think they concentrate on the unemployment and the wages data?
So I think the immediate reaction is probably focused on the headline number. And then, over hopefully not too long, maybe a matter of days, people will look at the data. And to be fair, the data has been difficult to read. We've had this panic over the summer, is a recession coming, and so on and so forth. And you had to really look into the weeds to, find conviction on where the economy was headed. And that takes a little bit of time.
And I think we should be somewhat fair, I guess, to some of the doves out there. Not everyone's sort of believing in the sell-off in rates. They're not believing that the Fed should be sort of pushing back the dovishness. And obviously, we have jolts coming up next week. We've the big sort of claim there from the doves has been, okay, look, the quits rate is moving lower. The unemployment to job openings ratio is now back to sort of pre-COVID levels, and I mean, you sort of expect it probably to continue to trend lower. I mean, what's your argument there? What's your take there? Should we be worried
So,
about the numbers we're seeing there?
So here is where I think we should be looking. We should look at the difference between the hiring rate and the separation rate, meaning the sum of quits and layoff. Because one thing that has distorted the picture in the JOLTS is that post-pandemic, the labor market flows are much lower than before. And it's because you've had a sort of long-term change in employers' behavior. During the pandemic, they realized that finding workers was difficult. So post-pandemic, they've been hanging on to their workers much more, giving them incentive to stay. And what's important to realize is that it's almost a game theoretic behavior in the sense that your decision whether to lay off or not lay off your workers depends a bit on what other firms are doing. Because if you are the one who decides to kick out your workers at the first hint of a slowdown in your business, but everybody else is hanging on to their workers, then it's going to be difficult to find workers to rehire once you are reassured that your business is actually doing very well. So I think the pandemic triggered a change in labor market behavior where businesses are much more careful with letting go of their workers. And that's why one reason we have lower, much smaller labor market flows. The other reason, of course, is that people are getting old and that some skills are in short supply. You are smiling, Ben, but I'm not because I have to fly in the US, and there's been for a number of years a shortage of air controllers. And that I won't go into the details, but that's material enough to make me think twice about, I'm only half joking here, but the bottom line is you had a long-term trend, which was population aging and some skills shortages. And then you have a trigger, which is a pandemic. Businesses realize that actually there are not that many good workers available out there. And then you have a big change of behavior, which I don't think people have taken into account. And I think that's why they are overly focused on the quits rate, for instance, and missing out the big picture, which is on net. If you look at the hiring rate minus the separation rate, I believe it's a tad higher than it was in 2019.
Okay, so basically what you're suggesting is that people are misunderstanding what the data is actually, well, what the quits rate is actually representing. And if you actually understand the data, it continues probably to suggest that the labor market isn't loosening at the same pace that the other data is probably suggesting. And as you say, we're probably in a scenario where the labor market remains strong. Okay, there's some natural loosening from sort of record extremes and but that's not a reason to sort of panic and think, okay, look, we're in the scenario where the SAM rule being triggered means that we're going into recession, as you know, you've been arguing for a good couple of months now.
Exactly. And to Sam's credit, she herself has said that her rule was a false positive. So, yeah, 100%.
And I guess we should probably round up the week ahead. We have looked into the final sort of couple of data points we have. I know you talked about GDP at the start of the sort of week's preview, but we also have the manufacturing PMI. Now I know you're not a huge fan of the manufacturing PMI, especially when the hard data suggests we're seeing sort of strength in the economy. I mean, it's 3% Q and Q is the estimate for next week. But at the same time, is there some worthiness, some credit in this data that the manufacturing PMI has been sub 50, I think, since late 2022 for every month other than one? Should we care about the release, or do you just think, okay, look, it's something the traders care about, but in reality, it's not really going to move the Fed, it's not going to, or it shouldn't move the markets, and it won't change
Well,
your view?
if you are a trader, you care a lot, but don't worry, we have you covered. We have this event section of our website where we look at the market impact of the manufacturing PMI and we quantify and we look at it in a different market. So, yeah, I think that's where we can help. people the most, because from my simple-minded economist perspective, I've stopped being excited by sub-50 manufacturing PMIs a long time ago.
Perfect. Thanks for that, Dominique. So we've got, I mean, a lot to digest over the next week. Hopefully, this call's helped everybody that's watching. Thank you very much, Dominique.
Thanks, Ben. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
You too. Thanks, everybody. Bye.